welcome. Welcome, welcome. It's not a surprise that there are so many people here to honor and celebrate the life of Geert. I'm Reverend Karen Brammer. I'm the current minister for Fourth Unitarian. I knew I've known Gordon as long as I knew Geert. I was here just 2 years ago, and so my communications, my connections to Geert were with him in his bed or his wheelchair or moving between the two. So I didn't know the tour de force that was Geert moving through the life of this congregation and many other places in his life. And so I'm thrilled to be able to welcome and hold the form of this ceremony with Reverend Don Sangre, who was minister here starting in 2003. And so the two of us are just delighted and honored to be able to offer this service in Geert's honor. And so I will begin also by saying many of the conversations that I had with Geert, whenever I asked him a question, at least every conversation we had, he would refer to Baruch Spinoza. I don't know how many of you had heard him talk about Spinoza. Oh, yeah, quite a few. There we go. So you will not be surprised that there are quite a few readings that are from Baruch Spinoza. And so I begin with this, which seemed particularly appropriate. Of all the things that are beyond my power, I value nothing more highly than to be allowed the honor of entering into bonds of friendship with people who sincerely love truth. For as things beyond our power, I believe there is nothing in the world which we can love with tranquility except such people. And so you are truly welcome to this service in honor of Geert. And so now I will invite Gordon to light the chalice. There's a matchbox right behind. And as he does that, we will read in our time of grief. In our time of grief, we light a flame of sharing, the flame of ongoing life.
In this time when we search for understanding and serenity in the face of loss, we light this sign of our quest for truth, meaning, and community.
There are members of this congregation who are going to sing Amazing Grace as the candles on our wall are lit by Reverend Don Sangre. Thank you.
Amazing grace, how sweet.
There were a few words in that beautiful, beautiful song that lives in our hearts that I could hear Geert's voice. And what do you believe? What is grace to you? And in my conversations with him, I knew that one of the reasons he found a home in Unitarian Universalism was because each of us finds our own way to connection with whatever is ultimate, whatever is most true, whatever is the ground of being, whatever is the source of life in our own understanding. And so I'll invite you all, in the name of prayer and centering, to just ease your mind, your heart, your hands, your feet. And in whatever way you are open to that which is so much larger than each of us individually, to open yourself now and bring in that love, that impulse to life that is universal. And in this moment, to know that our being together, our collective love and witness, is part of what will help those who are closest and most dear in Geert's life to learn how to live with his body not here today or the next day, but that this collective love, this force of being, is part of what will sustain those who love Geert. And may we also know that our coming together is a celebration of Geert's wonderful life. May all that we do this day serve to honor that memory and help each of us live that much more closely to what we most loved in Geert. May it be so for us all. Amen, and blessed be. Now, there is in your order of service music, and one of the pieces is called Comfort Me. It's on 1002, and our choir, our singers, our guitar players will guide us in singing that song. And I'm going to suggest that we remain seated. And together, Dawn and I would like to invite you into a responsive reading. And the words are in your order of service printed on the right-hand side. Responsive reading from none other than Baruch Spinoza. Thank you, Pam and Jim. Insofar as the mind sees things in their eternal aspect, it participates in eternity.
The more clearly you understand yourself and your emotions, the more you become a lover of what is.
Fear cannot be without hope, nor hope without fear.
Peace is not an absence of war. It is a virtue, a state of mind, a disposition for benevolence, confidence, and justice.
The highest activity a human being can attain is learning for understanding, because to understand is to be free.
The world would be happier if all people had the same capacity to be silent that they have to speak.
Can you hear him say that?
Okay.
The more you struggle to live, the less you live. Give up the notion that you must be sure of what you are doing. Instead, surrender to what is real within you, for that alone is sure. And at this point, I welcome Hank Bauman.
My brother, Geert Hendrik Bauman, was born in Rotterdam on May 28, 1923. Geert came into this world with an incompletely formed hand. Also, in subsequent years, both his feet needed extensive surgery. This presented a stressful situation for our mother, who surely missed the support of her husband, who was employed by the Holland America Line as a navigator. The arrival of two more children, my sister Margot and myself, proved to be more than our mother could cope with. And in May 1927, she was admitted to an institution for the mentally disabled. She remained there for the rest of her life. The care for Geert and myself fell to our maternal grandmother, a lovely woman to whom we are forever grateful. Geert always remembered that Oma took us to the Dutch equivalent of the Unitarian Universalist Association, thus sparing us the consequences of religious indoctrination. When going to school, it turned out that Geert had an aptitude for the sciences. At home, he happily constructed cranes and engines with his mechanic set, and together we spent many hours in the pursuit of these activities. These years were the happiest of our childhood. During the summer vacations of the last 3 years of his elementary school, Geert spent on board a small coaster roaming the Channel, the North Sea, and the Baltic Ocean. He was most of the time in the engine room, because he was mechanically inclined, and the diesel fumes and the boisterous movement of the ship did not agree with his stomach. And the days at sea were recorded in his diary as seasick. Oh. The last trip on the coaster ended in August 1939 in the Kieler Canal, which was full of German warships. In December of 1938, our father remarried and established a new family home, and being in a more intimate relationship with his sons, decided that Geert would be happier to leave high school after the junior term. Geert then entered the College of Mechanical Engineering in September 1939. In September the 28th, our siblings, my brothers, were born, and my father was still sailing to the United States. But in May 1940, Nazi Germany invaded the Netherlands, Rotterdam was bombarded, and the school Geert attended was destroyed. That summer, Geert helped to build, make new models for the drafting classes. He breezed through the remaining 3 years and graduated cum laude in the spring of 1943. He accepted employment from the Philips Company in Eindhoven, and this left the parental home. And that was the end of our life together at home. He was just 20 years old. The war progressed with the landing of the Allied troops in Normandy in June 1944, and throughout the summer, Allied armies advanced through France and Belgium, and in September, crossed the border of the Netherlands, where Geert lived at that time, and he was liberated. While American and British tanks rumbled through the streets of Eindhoven, Geert sat down in a little cafe with his best friend, and together, they decided what they were going to do in this liberated country. The decision then was to enter the master program of technical applied physics at the University of Delft. But first, Geert had to complete his senior high school, because that was an admission requirement, which he did in the spring of 1946. The following years were spent in Delft, working and studying till his graduation in 1951. He had reached his goal set out in 1944. Now trained and experienced, the world was his oyster. Geert sought wider horizons and applied for admission to the United States. The processing of the paperwork took a year, during which he was employed on a refinery in London, England, for an American company. At last, his visum arrived, and my brother disappeared across the Atlantic. Now Geert found himself in an enviable position where he could choose his work environment, offering projects that interested him. Also, soon after his arrival, he met Dorothy, whom he married in 1957. You remember that, Dorothy? The children, Sharon, Richard, and Gordon, arrived with all the joys and more than the normal problems of a young family. And in 1958, Corrie and my wife and best friend established ourselves in Canada. And though restrained by distance, the families had close contact. And reflecting upon the experiences of his childhood, and that is an important element in his life, took intense interest in the well-being of his family. He exposed him to horseback riding, attended baseball games, sports meets, and Special Olympics, and long trips across the continent, showing the children the variety of landscapes and beauty of this country and its people. Schools were also chosen to address the needs of the child, and Geert's workplace was determined by the needs of the children. And that is how he traveled every day for 10 years to Kingston, where his employer had assigned him to work. And rather than to really relocate his family and remove them from the services they needed. And that is a very reflective characteristic of my brother, that his family was more important than the interest that he had in his work, because he could have chosen anything, anywhere to work. But the kids were first. Geert and Dorothy also contributed greatly to the Unitarian Fellowships. shades of his childhood. He was the treasurer, president, photographer, and electrician extraordinary. The fellowship also recognized him with the grand celebration of his 80th birthday. Geert also took great interest in his siblings. There was a time that Corrie and I were sailing around in a sloop. Geert was rather concerned about this and often said, "Tell me where you are and where you're going." So one day I phoned him from Las Palmas in Gran Canaria and told him that Corrie and I were leaving for the Caribbean. About 4 weeks later, I called him again. And Geert said excitedly, "Henk, where are you?" "Well, Barbados." Upon hearing this, one would expect to answer the usual questions about 4 weeks sailing in the trade winds, about storms and food, and handling the ship, and the experience of the crew in a small sailboat on the ocean for 28 days. Well, there was none of that. After a long silence, reflective silence, Geert finally said, "Are you still married?" He had a sense of humor. During the years of our retirement, we enjoyed holidays together in Tuscany and Nova Scotia and in Holland, and Geert and Dorothy took part in interesting trips to Israel and Japan and many places in between. Being an avid photographer, he often showed us his extensive reportage. Also, during the last years, he expressed his disillusion about the increasingly religious intolerance, the increasingly unequal distribution of wealth, and the terrible consequences of the gun culture of his adopted homeland. More and more, as the years went by, did physical difficulties begin to restrain his daily activities, especially in the last year, severely diminished his enjoyment of life. Thus, in a sense, Geert's death came as a relief of his suffering. According to his wishes, his ashes are now upon the waters of the North Sea, where he and his forefathers sailed in the service of the Dutch mercantile navy. Now, I cannot anymore hear his voice over the telephone. I will not hear anymore his inquiries about my children and their families. I will not anymore hear his exasperation about the exercises of the folks in Washington. Geert died on his birthday, May 28th. The most intense shock of his passing has come and gone. Now, Corrie and I miss my brother, that inquisitive, compassionate man, more than words can say. This gathering is one expression of my brother's life. The warmth and appreciation that you have shown is most heartening, and Corrie and I thank you.
Sharon, would you come forward?
Okay. So my father was such a great gift to me in my life, and I am so grateful for him for so many things. Let's see. He was a Rock of Gibraltar presence, very rational, ethical, and moral, and almost never judgmental. He was interested and supportive of everything I did and was always ready to listen and always seemed to know the thing to say. He loved all three of his children equally and accepted us for all for who we were and was always encouraging and ready to do what he could for us. He believed in education and investing in good tools. He had a great sense of humor. I loved to hear him laugh, and I loved when I could make him laugh. He was a talented photographer and documented every occasion of our family. I am grateful for the thousands of beautiful pictures that he gave to us. He wanted to see us to see the United States, so it took several summers, and we visited pretty much every one of the national parks, which he loved. I had a wonderful, wonderful father, and he will be with me forever.
Hi, I'm Pamela. I'm Geert's niece, Dorothy's sister's daughter. And first, actually, I'm going to read something that Geert's cousin from the Netherlands sent. He couldn't be here. His name is Hout Pappenhausen, mispronounced, I know, for the real Dutch people out there. Geert, the eldest son of Margaretha Pappenhausen and Koen Bouwman, followed his father. He crossed the North Atlantic Ocean, and whereas Koen sailed regularly between the old and the new world as the captain of an elegant steamship, for Geert it was a one-way voyage. A new future attracted not only the recently graduated engineer from the University of Delft, but in those days also many Dutch citizen emigrants to the United States, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. Burning one's bridges was definitive then. Airmail was the only possibility to maintain contact with relatives and friends in the old country. Also because life in the new country took all of their time and energy. The Dutch language is familiar with the expression to leave one's home and hearth, meaning that the emigrant not only separates himself physically, but primarily emotionally from his familiar background. Geert was a man with willpower and a bright mind. His academic career occurred under difficult circumstances. He lacked a parental home when he was still very young due to the illness of his mother and his father being at sea. For this reason, he was cared for by his maternal grandparents and the siblings of his mother. He also went through a time of economic depression in the 1930s and the difficult war years of the Nazi occupation. But he succeeded in his academic career and graduated with honors as a technological applied physics engineer, which was an exceptional achievement, especially in a time when attending the university was possible only for a small number of people. Geert also thought extensively about ethics and morality and questioned certainties. He was an admirer, as we know, of the principles of Spinoza, who equated God with nature. In the 1990s, Geert renewed his ties with his relatives in the Netherlands. This led consequently to many get-togethers with me and my family in the Netherlands and in Yorktown Heights. His thoughts about his Dutch past were always extensively discussed. But in the first place, Geert was interested in the life of our family. He was always a true friend. Jean-Jacques Rousseau noticed that people are not what they appear to be. I remember Geert not in the first place as a rational man with an incisive analytical mind, which he was, but as a sensitive and involved human being. So I just wanted to add a few of my own words to talk about my uncle's ties with his family here in the United States. As I said before, Dorothy was my mother's sister, and the two families were very close all my life. They drove out to San Diego to visit us every other year for as many years as I can remember when I was a child. That's when you saw all of the national parks. And we came to Yorktown, and then in my young adulthood for many Thanksgivings and Christmases when I was living in New York City. And I have to admit that he was a bit intimidating when I was a child. I remember his booming voice calling out at Disneyland or some other park when Rich had wandered off somewhere, and he would just, with his booming voice, "Dick!" But as I grew up, I realized how much Geert was at the center of our extended family, holding us all together with his generosity, his selflessness, his capacity to solve problems, and his sense of humor. I felt as included in his paternal caring as if I were his own daughter, especially after my stepfather died and I was fatherless myself. And when I had my own children, he was as loving to them as if he were their own grandfather. He would always ask me how my beautiful children were, and he would tell me what a great job I was doing raising them. One of my last favorite memories of him was when I brought my children to visit him in the rehab center, and he spent an hour or more talking to them, not about himself, his problems, what was wrong with him, but about their lives and their futures. To the very end, he focused more of his energy on making other people feel comfortable and appreciated than on himself. And I'm so glad that we have this opportunity to focus our energy on how much we loved and appreciated him.
Would you sing to us? Josh Davies and Susan Shefflin will be speaking, and I don't know if you talked with each other about who would go first, but Josh's name is there, so come on up, Josh.
Like many from this fellowship, I first met Geert when I started attending services here at the fellowship. Both Geert and Dorothy warmly welcome so many of us who are now longtime members here. Over the years, I got to know Geert well over countless cups of coffee after the services here on Sunday. We often got caught up in our conversations unaware of the time and didn't realize that we were the last ones here, usually to Dorothy's chagrin, but and my wife. Well, we found we had a lot in common. Geert and I worked in the same industry, but about a generation apart. Geert worked for, I think, Honeywell, right? Honeywell and IBM. And I worked for a company called Emerson. And we both specialized in industrial process control, which we could never describe to anybody but ourselves. Geert's work at IBM helped to create the industry that I work in now. I know he enjoyed sharing stories about the early days in his career with the analog devices and how he made some of these things work, and I enjoyed listening to those as well. We shared our beliefs are very common. Several years ago, Reverend Sangri gave a service here on spirituality and humanism. And she gave us a test. We get tests here at the Unitarian Church. The test asks us to rank on a scale from 0 to 5 if we agree to statements like, I believe in a soul that exists beyond our physical selves, 5 being if you agreed and 0 if you didn't, and anything in between depending on where you stood in your belief. And there are about 20 questions like this, and Donna had us line up based on our score, and high scores being more spiritual and low scores being less. And then she... It was a well-attended service, and even my father came, and we all lined up around the room. Do you remember the service?
Yeah.
Lined up all around the room, got out of our chairs, lined up all around the room. And I think Dorothy, we're somewhere in the middle, you know, kind of nice. And I think Bill Hart, of course, he was way over here on the left. But the last three, way over here, were myself, Geert, my father. The bona fide humanists of our fellowship. And I was very, very proud to be standing next to all those gentlemen. And I'll never forget that. In public life, we're often asked to share our beliefs. And with some organizations like the Scouts, which you know I'm involved in, it can be a problem. There's still a requirement to believe in God in Scouts. And Geert taught me Spinoza's philosophy that you could think of the universe as God. And I often use this to help a Scout who's trying to navigate, to bridge that gap between what's expected and what their beliefs are. And so to me, that's part of Geert's legacy. Geert's service to the congregation is well known and inspired many of us to step up and take on the jobs to keep this peaceful little congregation going, including myself. I think it's fitting that our congregation honors Geert with the people who do the most for this fellowship with the Geert Bauman Award, which is mounted over here. But in the end, Geert would say that what we believe in doesn't really matter. What's truly important is the community that we create here. I love him. I miss him. And for me, he'll always be a part of this community.
What a great and powerful gift it is to love and to be loved. That can never be taken away from us. I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to speak today about my dear friend, Geert Bauman. Geert was a man of integrity, strength, and kindness. His commitment to service to others made a profound impact on my life and on all of our lives. It's hard for me to believe that it is exactly 28 years ago today that I walked through that door, and one of the first people who greeted me was Geert Bauman. At the time, I knew nothing of Unitarian Universalism. Geert was one of the first to explain that there is no dogma here. There is no requirement to believe a certain way. All comers were to be greeted with respect and honor, whatever part of life's journey they were on. He made sure that each person was made especially welcome. Geert was a man who believed that it was important to think about life's ultimate meaning. He was always wrestling with the major questions. How did we come to be on this earth? And what are we here for? And we discussed those things so many times, and always there was that big question mark at the end. Could we ever know the answers to life's mysteries? Would it always be a process of seeking, and would there always be mysteries? Spinoza, the 17th century Dutch philosopher who's been mentioned many times here this morning, was an important influence for Geert. And he said he felt closest to his rational outlook. Geert didn't know whether to describe himself as agnostic, atheist, humanist, deist, or perhaps Christian without doctrines, or perhaps a little bit of each. But he was very much a Unitarian and a man who possessed a great spiritual power for good. I saw him demonstrate it over and over again in all his interactions with his fellow human beings. Life was about connecting with other people. I remember that Geert was especially fond of Dr. Anthony Padovano, who was a professor of religion at Ramapo College in New Jersey, who often came here to speak. And we would discuss those lectures and talks for hours afterward. I also remember that Geert loved the Dutch painter Vermeer. And in 1995, I got the chance to see the Vermeer exhibition in Washington, D.C. And I was so inspired. I came back and I was just on fire to do a program here. I remember that Geert helped me so much with the technical part of the slide program for that. He especially loved the view of Delft, Vermeer's painting of his beautiful city. And he was so generous with his technical expertise putting that slideshow together. What I wanted to say about Vermeer that day is the thing I want to say today about Geert. Just as Vermeer captured and gave to us the transcendence of the ordinary moment in the light coming through the window and illuminating its subjects, Geert's eagerness to be of service on a daily basis inspired all the people that he met to be their best.